Hey, Trojan fans, it's time to get into the huddle with the Peristyle Podcast. The Peristyle Podcast is your weekly ticket to USC football and recruiting news. Don't forget, you can download the podcast 24/7 at our website, peristylepodcast.com. And now, here's the host of the Peristyle Podcast, USCFootball.com publisher, Ryan Abraham.
Hello, Trojan fans. Welcome to the Peristyle Podcast on a Wednesday. We're going to talk some USC Trojan football with our buddy, our pal, Dan Weber, USCFootball.com beat writer and columnist. Lots of questions you guys have sent in about this USC team as we get countdown 1 week until signing day. We're going to focus this one a lot about the team. If you missed it, we did a recruiting podcast yesterday that was really well received. We actually put it on the premium side. So if you're a USCFootball.com member or subscriber, go to USCFootball.com. You can get our premium recruiting podcast, 90 minutes of just Gerard Martinez going off, telling you everything about USC football recruiting as we count down the signing day. So it's great stuff. If you're not a subscriber, jump in right now. 7-day free trial. It's definitely worth it. You got to check it out. It's the awesome information on the Peristyle and all that. So if you want to write into us, podcast@USCFootball.com is our email address. We want to hear from you. Send us your questions. We will try to get to all of them. You can leave us a voicemail too by calling 641-715-3900 extension 816-646 or go to our website, peristylepodcast.com. You can leave a voicemail on the left side of the page from your mobile device or your computer. It's a lot of different ways to get a hold of us. We do love to hear from you, and we'll try to get to each and every one of your questions. We actually gave Harvey Hyde the week off this week, so we'll try to get him again next week before signing day. A lot of stuff going on here at the Peristyle Podcast. Without further ado, let's bring in Dan Weber. What is up, Dan? How you doing?
Pretty good. Pretty good. Again, we keep saying it, but there's never a break from news when it's USC football. I mean, it just keeps steamrolling day after day after day.
It does. And it's not just football, Dan. There's recruiting. There's the team stuff we want to talk about. USC UCLA play a basketball game tonight too at Gaylord Center, 8 p.m. So 11 p.m. on the East Coast, which kind of stinks, but it's a big one this week, tonight.
Yeah, although I'm kind of eight might be a little bit late, but if I were the LA schools, I would demand that there are no more rush hour games that start 5:30, 6 o'clock. It's really difficult to get to a game on time if you work in L.A. and you try to go to either USC or UCLA and they start the game, on East Coast time, basically. It really screws the people with season tickets and the people, who want to go see a particular game. And I think it's really been damaging to, building back these programs when people can't get to the games that, start at 5:30 and 6. So I don't mind. Eight's a little late. I'd like 7:30. 7:30 would be my ideal, starting times, especially for the big games, because that should be about, the crowds in L.A. and the fans here. And TV has made it very difficult for them to get to a lot of games at either school. It's easier to get to USC. I mean, that's one of the advantages USC has over UCLA. When I used to cover UCLA, I mean, you needed a helicopter at rush hour to get, to Poly Pavilion, or you had to get there at 3 o'clock in the afternoon. I'm kind of in favor of at least a little bit later starts than, say, last weekend when they're 5:30 and 6 o'clock at Gaylord Center.
Yeah, it's kind of, there's a window you want to be in. Eight, probably a little too late. Five, that's too early. You got just with the LA traffic, you kind of have to be in there. But yeah, hopefully people can come out. I think it's a sellout, Dan, right?
It is a sellout, though. Yeah. So they'll be out for that one. I don't know if that's the good news or the bad news because, you went to the Arizona game last week and less than 5,000 showed up at Galen. So yeah, I think a lot of those tickets sold for tonight's game are UCLA fans who were so excited about how the season's going and wanted to see them, get revenge for losing all three games to USC last year. And others are USC fans who will go to the UCLA game, but maybe no other games. And I think that they've got to figure out a way to, to get a crowd of 10,000 when they're playing an Arizona team. And they they didn't have anywhere near that. And yes, he's got to figure out something on this whole basketball thing, because you know, you just got to, you know, heighten expectations, expect to be, you know, you're in the middle of the best recruiting area in the whole country by far. You've got a great building that's in a great location, you know, for a great school. You know, what's not to like? You're a mile and a half from two NBA franchises. I mean, there's no other place in America that's as well situated to have a great college basketball program as USC. Obviously, it's hard when you're a football school in most people's mind, to also become a basketball school, but I think USC has a chance if they put it together. But, you know, they don't just give you a place in the, you know, top, you know, 10 or whatever in college basketball. You gotta figure out how to do it. And it's hard if you haven't had that tradition. But USC is one of those programs that has a chance. They just gotta make it happen.
It's funny. Weird that we're talking about basketball to start the show. We actually had a basketball question too, so I apologize for, if you only like football, I mean, it's a big basketball game tonight. Nick in Cyprus said, hello, Trojan fans. So he wants to know, what have you thought about the basketball season from being 17-4, 4-4 in Pac-12 play, Boatwright being out, the schedule, et cetera. He said, fight on, love what you guys do. And then, he also wanted to know if we're going to have a National Signing Day party. Hosted by our site, and we're working on that. So check it out. So we might do something at the lab, next to USC, like a lunch sort of thing on next Wednesday. So check back on uscfootball.com for that. But Dan, get your thoughts on,
Yeah, that'd be great if you could do that. We actually had, I hosted a USC, at the lab in, I guess first week of September, last week of August. We had my Cincinnati St. Xavier High School was playing St. John Bosco in the Herb Street Classic at the University of Cincinnati. It was on ESPN. So we had a party, a viewing party at the lab. And that's the game. Bosco wins 34-0. And, you know, and I'm telling them, I didn't think they were going to be as good as last year, but wow. Then my Cincinnati St. X team goes on to win the Ohio State Championship. And they had this giant rally by the end of the year, and they've got a quarterback who's going to Penn State with one of the Elite 11. So they, you know, they didn't let, you know, getting Bosco, you know, steamrolled by Bosco. But that's a great place to watch a game, and, you know, just a, you know, terrific location right across the street from, you know, the campus and what have you. So I hope you can pull that off. As far as the basketball team's concerned, I know when they were, you know, 14-0, I'm thinking, just, you know, in their rank, you know, for a month solid, and they're thinking, what doesn't have a good feel here? It's just, and then they get into Pac-12 play, and all of a sudden, they can't get any shots for Elijah Stewart, and he can't make any shots, and what have you. And, it's just, you gotta think, gosh, they lost 6 of their 12 guys who were eligible to come back next for this season, chose not to come back. 2 went to the, you know, declared for the NBA, didn't make it. Caton Reinhardt is up there in, you know, at Marquette winning games for them. And so you thought, okay, they're going to have problems with depth. They've got a couple of really nice looking recruits that transfer. Maybe they can make something happen. And they were kind of making it happen, but it didn't look like they were getting better or building, that they were just, you know, and especially with Benny Boatwright out. And so I don't know. I know there are people that look at this game tonight and say, wow, if only USC could slow down UCLA. And I'm thinking, no, I'd rather have USC figure out how to, you know, play that game that they play so well, that full court run up and down the floor, scramble on defense, transition where you either get the ball to the glass or you get an open 3 off your transition offense, and don't have to run your half court stuff, because this is not a team that really runs its half court offense or defense all that well against good, solid, you know, well coached teams like Arizona, like Oregon, like Utah. you know, those teams, and they end up losing the Cal game against a team that probably shouldn't have walked out of Galen with the win. And that's where you want to see this USC team, young as it is, thin as it is, to develop more of a sense of who they are and how they win basketball games and how they have to play to do that. And you don't see that yet. You know, it looks like a team that if they play somebody who's really knows who they are and knows how to slow the game down to their pace and all that kind of thing, it's going to be hard to beat those teams. But, you know, they had a chance against Cal, didn't make it. They had a chance against Arizona despite the horrific start and couldn't quite pull it off. So they're an interesting team, but one that you just probably don't want to get your hopes up too much for because you just, you know, don't know how they're going to show up. Or, you know, they keep bad teams like Arizona State in the game much longer than they really should have and let them come back at the very end and have to scramble for their lives. So I don't know if this is a team that's building or where exactly it is. Might find out a little bit tonight. You know, if it were me, I'd like to see it be, I don't want to see them slow UCLA down. I'd like to see them beat UCLA 100-98. That'd be my game. And so we'll see how that goes. But I wouldn't try to slow them down because I don't think USC plays very well slowing the ball down. And they've tried and it hasn't worked so well.
Makes sense. So thanks for that one, Nick. And we had a lot of basketball talk to start the show. So we'll see if we get some hate mail.
Yeah.
Okay, so let's jump into some football. Let's get right into football, okay? Tarek, who has a great question, says, do you expect Clancy Pendergast to use more three lineman sets this coming year? So I think he's talking about, like, three interior linemen instead of
really they've
had two.
Yeah, I mean, I know people will start looking at that thinking, okay, you got to rotate these potential big-time recruits into the game, and maybe they will. I think it'll depend on – I mean, one of the things you know, though, they're probably – other than Stanford – and Oregon State, you know, and we don't have Utah flip a coin. But, you know, you're playing a schedule of people that are going to spread you out. And, you know, the way Clancy has dealt with that is with two down linemen. Now, the idea is obviously Stevie Tuikalavato isn't going to be there. So you're not going to have, as it turns out, a 350-pounder. We find out from the weigh-ins at the Senior Bowl in the middle of that, you know, defense pushing that center back and occupying two people at least, sometimes three. So how do you make up for that? And I think Clancy's, you know, a lot of along the lines of what Bill Belichick does, where he just looks at his personnel, looks at what you do and says, how can I use the 11 guys I've got on the field the best possible way to shut you down? And I think you might have a more athletic, group of interior defensive linemen that you can mix and match more. So I wouldn't, you know, guarantee it, but I think they'll really, you know, take a look at it. Is there a way? I mean, you look at some of these guys on film, and they're pretty darn athletic. They may have their hand in the ground, but and there may be, you know, some different ways to do things out of the, say, the base, 35 or 53 or however you want to call it, Clancy's base defense, and maybe you can incorporate, you know, one more guy even on third down. But I think that's why they have spring ball. And August, and we'll see where those guys are, and you know where this defense is. But you know, you open up in Western Michigan, you know, is one thing. But then you know, game two, you got Stanford, and that's a, you know, there's somebody that loads it up, and the three down lineman probably is a pretty good idea. And then Texas, you know, got a quarterback, and they lose their really good running back, but. You know, you got different challenges, you know, each week. So, it might not be one of those things that you develop a pattern that you stay with all year, but you have the ability to go to it when you really, really need to, the three down linemen.
We actually had one more from Tarek. He gives a nice short, concise one, so we'll do another one. He said, do you expect Kenny Bigelow to be a full participant in spring football? Speaking of defensive line.
That's a good question. And I don't think we know the answer to that. I mean, there were times this year we wondered if he was going to start practicing in the fall, as he kept improving and, you know, kept doing more things and what have you. I would say there's a chance, that he, you know, participates. It probably, you know, you don't want to rush anybody, you know, with a knee, but I think the sooner he gets a chance to participate, the better for Kenny. So I would think they'll look at it and just see where exactly is he. I think there's a chance.
Yeah, we'll see with Kenny. I think there, you know, certainly could be some shakeup on the defensive line with all the young blood coming in, and Kenny Bigelow coming back would be huge, kind of like getting Stevie Tuikolovatu from last year.
Well, especially if you look at Kenny now, he doesn't look like the guy a couple of years ago that people saw on the field. He's a significantly larger person, and not with bad weight. He just built himself up. He's a bigger guy now. And I think one time he wanted to get, you know, slim and trim and sort of play that Rasheem Green type role. But I think he's realized his future was more being the, you know, the big plug guy who can just, you know, occupy a couple of people and still make plays. And so, I'll be interested to see what he weighs in at, and not that the official weights really matter, as we found out with Stevie, Tuikolovatu was listed at 320, and Zach Banner, who went from 345 to 381 apparently this season, was listed at 360. So I guess they split that one down the middle, kind of, but it'll be interesting to see what Kenny actually weighs in at.
We got one from Dylan. He said, I'm a current student at USC, and I just recently discovered the Peristyle podcast. Well, thank you, Dylan, for discovering that. I'm glad. Hope your studies are going well, and thanks for listening to us. He said, I've been wrapped up in the last few weeks. Obviously, there's a lot of hype going into next year, but I feel that there's still some questions about the defensive front. He wants to know, who's going to be playing next to Cameron Smith next year, in your opinion?
That's a good question. I think they're going to try some different combinations. You've got a couple of guys who can fly, and I think young guys, John Houston, will see where he is. I don't think he's ever going to get, you know, classic middle linebacker size, but he's a big-time athlete, flew around on and a special team. He'll be bigger than, say, Quentin Powell. Will he be, you know, probably maybe right in the same ballpark that Michael Hutchings was? I think you'll get a chance to look at a couple of those guys. I know people have said, well, what about Uchenna and bringing him in? He looks more like a middle linebacker at 235, 240, 6'3". But, you know, he does such a good job on the edge. Do you want to take away, you know, from that? But, you know, that might be another way that USC looks. I wouldn't want to prejudge that one. I think that's one of those ones where you just see how all the pieces fit together and where that gets you. You know, it might be also what shape they're in on the edge with Connor Murphy and Oluwole Batiko. You know, if those two, let's say, are ready to, you know, make that big step up, which physically they ought to be able, you know, to do. I don't think there's any, and they showed us enough at times, you know, with the scout team and with the second group that could be a possibility. So I think it's not any one move but it's maybe a series of moves that gives you, as Clancy always says, I want the best 11, you know, on the field, meaning 11 working together, as one unit. So I think you'll see some experimenting there.
Let's stay on the defensive side, Dan. We got Ralph. And he said, hey, Ryan, new subscriber, longtime lurker. Well, thank you for signing up for USAFootball.com. Hope you enjoy it. I think you will. He said, enjoying not being confounded by the gold key symbol. Yes, that's the premium. If you want to read some of those stories and read the peristyle, and that's what you get. He said, with Adore gone, who do you see stepping up in the roles of cornerback? He said, Jack Jones looked lost in the Rose Bowl and returner. And then with Connor Murphy, I expected to see him on the field a bit more this past year. How is he looking? Do you see him in a similar role as Porter Gustin or as a down lineman? And does he have any wheels at 6'7"? So those are the defensive questions. That's Ralph from Folsom.
Yeah. In the secondary, I think it might be a little unfair to, judge Jack from, a couple of plays in a secondary on a game where USC gave up 49 points and Penn State was hot as heck. Although, he played more in the second half, and they did shut down, Chris Godwin in the second half pretty much. So he's obviously going to get a shot. I think they're all excited about Pai Young, and not to mention Pai Young's all excited about his opportunities there. But, they've got a number of bodies in that secondary. But those would be the first two I think you would take a look at, stepping up for the Adoree spot. And in terms of, kick returner, I think, again, Jack Jones is going to get a shot. I also think, and he's got some of that, that elusiveness, that, unafraid to take a chance, grab the ball and go under the gun. And then there's also kind of the Deonte Burnett school of thought, where he's very sure, very solid hands with decent speed. And so I think, I'm looking at those two, for starters. On kickoff returns, you certainly could think for Dominic Davis, I think, at that point. Did I say, let's see. I'm trying to think if there's anybody else. Boom, boom, boom. I'd leave it right there for the time being. I don't know about if Vilas Jones gets in that mix. He's got a lot of acceleration. Especially kickoff returns are one thing. Punt return, that's a real combination of a whole lot of different skills. Whereas kickoff return, you got a much better chance of, the ball's coming to you. You catch it and you go. Whereas with punt return thing, you got a whole lot going at one time. So experience and judgment, I think, is really important. And a great set of hands, where kickoff return, you can kind of at times catch the ball with your chest and your elbows and tuck it in. Where with the punt return guy, you really got to have the hands.
And you mentioned some of the guys that his second part of his question was, he said, at wide receiver, it seems historically all of our star wide receivers have had impacts as freshmen. That didn't happen this year for any freshman. Do you see someone who has the potential to be a star wide receiver out of the incoming sophomore class? He said, I expected to see Pittman shine more last year. Thanks, Ralph from Folsom.
Yeah, Ralph, I think the problem is for Pittman to shine, you would have had to sit down at the beginning of the year, Stephen Mitchell or Darius Rogers, or you wouldn't necessarily have had Deonte Burnett, ready to break through. So, they basically had four starters. Deonte technically wasn't a starter, but he should have been. And I think they got it right. They got to him, and they got him the ball, and they got him, on the field when Steven went down. But I just think you can't quite say, just because in previous years you had freshmen that made a big impact and this year you didn't. There are all kinds of circumstances that govern that, more so than, say, just the ability of the freshman. And a lot of that is if he's got four guys ahead of him. And this year, that was the case. So I don't think that should take away from anything that you think about the ability of Michael Pittman or Justin Moutarbaby or, you know, any of those freshmen receivers who will be redshirt freshmen, except for Michael will be a sophomore. But next year, I mean, they got a lot out of this year. And I think there's a lot of talent there. And I don't look for any kind of drop off. You know, whether they've got somebody with quite, say, the strong hands of Darius that can catch it in a crowd through a defender. Not sure they replace that, but, there's a lot of, and Tyler Vaughns, I didn't mention him. There's just a lot of ability in this last year's recruiting class of wide receivers. And I think, you know, we'll be ready to step up. I think they got enough out of, even if they didn't, you know, get on the field in games, I think they got a lot out of their first year in college football.
We talked about this a little bit yesterday on the show, Dan. If you look at the USC recruiting class right now, there's 18 verbal commits, well, 4 signees and 14 commits, and one of them might sign, the most recent commit might sign as well and be an early enrollee. It sounds like that's going to happen. But there's some 3 stars, but right now there's 1 5 star, I believe 9 4 stars, 7 3 stars, and 1 not ranked who's a long snapper. And so here's the question. They said, I'm so disappointed in our recruiting this year. It seems that when we had a bad start, the coaches got scared of losing their jobs and concentrated on games, but not recruiting. Now we're paying the price. We're only getting 3-star players. And we're loaded with those guys. UCLA and Oregon, who had a terrible season, are doing better than us. Please explain that to me. I enjoy the podcast. Keep up the good work. Tom from the South Bay.
Tom. I'm not sure. I wonder, has the internet been cut off to the South Bay in the last week or so? I don't know. First of all, I agree. They concentrated on the season. I think they made the absolutely wise decision that, A, we may not be here if we don't get this thing turned around in the end of September. And so you concentrate on what you have to concentrate on, knowing that if you do get it turned around, as they did get it turned around, it changes everything in terms of your recruiting ability. So I think they made that was the right call, and they pulled it off. What you then tell yourself, however, is, and if we pull this off, we're going to have to scramble like crazy, and we're going to have to make every right decision. And we may not tell the whole world, but we're going to have to really get our act together, with probably compared to, say, the Ohio States and Alabamas and Clemsons and Michigans and what have you of the world, we've got probably an understaffed recruiting effort. However, from what we can tell, those guys have stepped up and the coaches have stepped up. And, you know, just like you probably aren't going to give back the Rose Bowl, even though they had to, you know, come back from they had to outscore Penn State 17-0 in the fourth quarter. You'll probably take that. And I would guess if this class fills out the way it looks like it just might, you're going to probably take that effort. Do you want to be doing that every year? Heck no. And you don't want to start 1-3 every year. But if you start 1-3, I think the first thing you do is figure that out and stop that slide, you know, and win your next 9 games and win the most exciting, you know, or one of the 2 most exciting bowl games of the year in front of, you know, a giant television audience, and then take advantage of that and go on and be USC when it comes to recruiting. But I don't think they had the opportunity, starting the way they did, to recruit any other way than they did. They had to hang back. And now I think it's paying off, but, you know, still a week to go, but I think they figured it out correctly for this year under these circumstances, but it shouldn't probably be the pattern of going forward. Although maybe the part about not letting everybody know who's committed, you know, the whole silent commit thing and that USC's always done pretty well, I don't think that's a bad idea. Yeah. And, you know, if you're not top 10 or top 5 on the recruiting rankings the week before letter of intent day, so what? If you're there when letter of intent day comes around, that's probably pretty good. You know, so I'm not sure. You know, they haven't, you know, the scoreboard is, you know, it's not, you know, finished. I mean, it wasn't finished after the first three quarters at the Rose Bowl either. So I wouldn't write them off at this point in time. I just wouldn't.
Good points there, Dan. Rick had a question. So with lower recruits that are raw and so many holes from players graduating and moving to the NFL, why is USC so hyped next year? Is it just Darnold? I'm afraid they'll get ranked higher early, yet they may fall from a loss. Plus, there's no break next season. Helton will definitely show just how good he can coach and prove to stay or go. Personally, I think a big-name coach is needed, proven winner and recruiter of men. Thank you, Rick from La Mirada.
Okay. Hey, Rick. Let's see. I think Mark Helfrich is available. I don't know if he was a big enough name or not. I think Todd Graham might be available, or Rich Rodriguez. Jim Moore probably going to be available. Brian Kelly, I think he might be available. Les Miles is available. So I don't know. You can say Clay Helton hasn't proved himself, and no question about it. You can't prove yourself in the first year. There's not even a possibility, or if you count it as a second year, you can't prove yourself in that period of time. There's a whole lot of things you got to do right to build a great college football program, which is the only standard that USC, you know, should accept. But to say that, you know, you haven't been even convinced a little bit by how they turned it around, how they got him to play for him, how they, won 9 straight, they got the second longest win streak in the nation. I mean, think about that. That's just, come on. I mean, they did some things right. And you can say, oh, it's all Sam Darnold or whatever. And, you know, that's to be determined as you go down the road, how they, turn this over and turn this over and to the next group and the next group. I think he proved some things definitely, and it looks like they may be proving some things, you know, they did on the field, and it looks like they may be, showing some things off the field. I mean, I would like to see Clay, you know, do a little bit more of what would Urban Meyer do, what would Jim Harbaugh do, what would, Nick Saban do in this situation, and really gear up, you know, the staffing. Yeah, I think I really would. I mean, for example, they've got a challenge now to replace Torrey Becton, who I was trying to set up yesterday an interview because, you know, he's the number 2 guy in the strength and conditioning department. And he came from Washington, and the kids love him and all talk about him and all reference him. And he was out on the field every day, and you wouldn't have known he wasn't a real presence. And so, talking to Paul Goldberg in the SID office about, you know, catching Torrey for an interview, and he said, oh, he just got hired by Cal as their top strength and conditioning guy. And so now you got to replace him. And he was an impactful guy. And all of those things will determine what kind of a job, you know, Clay Helton does. But that's where we'll see. I mean, some of these are things, you know, you maybe haven't done before. And we'll see how it goes. But I think you may be underrating, the kind of effort that it took for USC to get from where it was in the end of September to where it finished the 1st of January. That was pretty impressive.
It's funny you mentioned that, Dan, because we had a couple of questions about support staff. I'll read you the two of them that we got. Reggie in Seattle said, I don't hear a lot about current USC strength coach Ivan Lewis. Are injuries part of the process in any sport? As injuries are part of the process in any sport, I'd like to get your opinion on Lewis and his staff. Do you think he's the right guy for the position? And, is he doing a superb job there, or is there room for improvement? And then we also had, Eric in Duck Country. He said, I'd like to be optimistic and think that Coach Helton will add to the support staff in the way other programs are. Which former coach or coaches do you see Helton bringing on? Thanks, as always, Eric in Duck Country. So one on the strength side, Dan, and one on the support side, if you want to kind of talk about all that.
Yeah, on the strength side, I think they did a good job. I mean, you know, if you got into a game that was strength against strength, it was USC Washington. And there was no question the team with the stronger athletes, you know, with you know, USC. I don't think there's any question. They were bigger, stronger, tougher. They really did a pretty good job injury-wise this year. I don't think they're, you know, and that's not a direct correlation. You know, stuff happens. You can't, you know, hold a, you know, a coach, you know, a strength and conditioning program. You know, some of that stuff just, you know, not your fault. But I think in general, they did a pretty good job. And, you know, the numbers held up, the guys held up. Boom, boom, boom. Let's see. As far as coaches, you know, if the NCAA allows them the 10th full-time assistant coach, I would really like to see somebody come in whose main role would be recruiting. He'd be a supplementary coach in, you know, some area. You know, and Ed Orgeron wasn't a supplementary coach in any area, but he was, you know, such a, you know, powerful recruiter and recruiting presence. And it mattered so much to him. And I would think that kind of a person who could really, you know, be a full-time staffer, an on-the-field coach, but the ability, because I think this is a staff where you have people, really good professional experienced coaches who see their job, as development and coaching on the field. And that's what you want. You want guys that can do that. But then maybe you figure out another way to make up for that a little bit. And I think it's asking an awful lot of, say, T. Martin, who's now your, you know, wide receivers coach and your offensive coordinator, to also be, you know, your big time recruiting presence. So, and you know, this is just throwing a name out there just for the heck of it, because I have no idea whether this is even a possibility, but somebody like a Tosh Lapoy, who's rumored to be going back from Alabama to Cal, but that hasn't happened yet. But here's a guy who's coached a couple of places on the defense, you know, defensive line, linebackers. People are rumored, you know, well, is he going to be a defense coordinator at his next spot? But he's always been, you know, had this reputation for good and bad of being a big-time recruiter. Do you find that guy? Do you find a young Ed Orgeron who can really come in and take over the recruiting operation, you know, the way he was doing at LSU? That's who I would, you know, like to see him. I'd like to see him go in that direction.
All right. Thanks for that one. Well, from Reggie and Eric. We have Lamar in the high desert. He said he can't wait to see if USC is going to land the 4- and 5-star defensive lineman the first week of February. It's actually the first day of February, Lamar. The signing day is February 1 this year. He said, would you all know if there's any possibility to bring back the defensive tackle from Las Vegas, Noah Jefferson, who was on the team last season? Thanks, Lamar in the high desert.
I would, you know, if you follow Noah on Twitter, he's probably not coming back. He just looks like he's pretty well at home in Las Vegas. So, you know, it just is, you know, one of those things. It just this wasn't, I mean, some people, you know, can handle those kind of moves and be in a way, but it looks like he's got, you know, people around him that really need him to be in Las Vegas, and that's where he's going to be. And let's hope, you know, he can make it work if, you know, if he goes back to UNLV and decides, you know, I really want to play. But if you really don't want to be here, I'm just not sure what the sense of, you know, if people saying, gosh, if only he would come back, or gosh, if only, I'm just, you know, you got to really want to be here. And it's too hard to play college football at the level, you know, USC expects people to be able to play if they don't really want to be here. So I think you just wave goodbye and say good luck, and, you know, that's how you handle that. But I wouldn't spend much time trying to, you know, bring somebody like that back. Now, somebody like, say, a Khalil Rogers is not leaving until the end of the spring, and if there were an obvious place on the offensive line for him and he decided, you know, maybe I'll stay here, I wouldn't object to that. He's a good guy, a good teammate. Just things just didn't work out injury-wise, position-wise, all of that. But for the guys that don't want to be here, I wouldn't spend a lot of time thinking about them.
We have another one from Reggie in Seattle. He said, how much difference a year makes for college athletes, meaning that USC has tons of players on the roster who either redshirted or haven't played much the last couple of seasons. I'm wondering if we can expect significant improvement from year to year. Looking at the depth chart at defensive line, USC has the numbers. Can we expect any of the current USC guys to have breakout seasons? And if yes, which players do you think could improve enough to help the team next year? If I was looking at the USC depth chart at defensive line, I'm curious why USC hasn't developed any of those guys. Scott Dorton and others have to step up. Are they capable?
Well, I mean, I think there's all different kinds of situations. You know, there's size and physicality and just understanding how tough this is and how hard you got to go. And for some of the big guys, I think especially, that wasn't necessarily the way they had to play in high school, because they're so much bigger and more athletic. And I know I was talking to Roy Helmsley, and, 6'6", 315, offensive tackle, kind of just been a squad guy for a couple of years. And he was talking before the Rose Bowl. He said, T. Martin singled him out and said, there's a guy, he's really starting to show us something. And I talked to Roy. I said, what's going on? And he said, I think I just figured out how physical this game is and how physical I have to be. I think that's the case with a lot of those guys. Now, Malik Dorton might be a little bit on the smaller side. He may have to really develop, some other things to make himself viable as a down lineman. But say a Jacob Daniel with his size and his, potential, I think a lot of that is them deciding. You can't decide for them. You can't make them decide to be the guy that maybe they could be. So I think a lot of those guys, the light bulb has to go on. And I think if it does, and you got to try to help them, but you can't make it go on for them. You got to, just be there and be ready so that they can take advantage of everything that's offered to them when that happens. So I'm not in the prediction business in those terms. I think you go to practice and you watch and you see who wants to do it and who shows up and who looks different attitude-wise and who's able to be coached up and who's got the discipline and who's got the, the want. They got to want it badly. And, that's what you got to watch for. And I think, I'm not going to predict, but I think there are some people like that who definitely, can come on. And, I don't think it's a case of USC's not developing them. I just think you got to show, if you're going to play on the field in Clancy's defense, you got to prove to Clancy that he can trust you and that you deserve to be there. He'll develop you if you share that, but you can't develop somebody who's not ready to be developed yet. So that's kind of my take.
All right. We got a few more. We'll let you go. Simon said, obviously USC's had a pretty scary turnover in the coaching staff over the last few years, but unless something dramatic happens, USC will go into next season with its staff totally unchanged. You'd think that this might have a large effect. Kids get to be in the same schemes and can process information more quickly. You can install relatively more playbook because you have the fundamentals down. Veterans are able to coach up the youngsters having spent more time in the system. Bill Belichick often says that he expects the biggest leap in player development from year one to year two as rookies get used to the Patriots schemes. But the stability of the coaching staff has not really been mentioned when looking forward to next season. Am I making too much of the gains, or should we be optimistic that this should be, you should see more than the usual player development as we move to next season? Fight on. And Dick Hammer, from Simon.
I think that's underrated, that, you know, coaching stability. I mean, excuse me. I think, continuity in schemes and in thinking. For example, what Rasheem Green was asked to do was completely different from what he'd been asked to do. And there was an adjustment period for him, and there was a kind of a back and forth between him and Kanisi as to, you know, what you had to do and how you had to do it. And I think that happens a lot. I know as the season goes on, for example, you saw Stevie T and what he was able to do. The more he understood what he could do in the system and the more they understood what they could do with him. I mean, I think that'll happen all across the board, in terms of guys really knowing what's expected of them and coaches really knowing what they can do with guys. When you look around the Pac-12, there are a ton of new coordinators, you know, both sides of the ball. That probably can't help. I mean, you look at across town and, you know, new quarterbacks coach and new running backs coach, I think, and new offensive coordinator. That's going to be tough. I mean, you know, with the tough times they hit on offense this year, and now they've got all new people. So I think, yeah, it might be undervalued as to, you know, the stability at USC and how that's going to play out.
Yeah, I haven't seen a lot of stability, so it's can't hurt for sure. We got two more. Let's see. John in Brea, he said, rhetorical question, but why does USC always travel back-to-back when they have a Friday game at Cal and fly home early Sunday in the morning, and then in 4 days get back on a plane to Washington? Why aren't one of those games a home game versus traveling on a short practice week? But I know TV money is all Larry Scott cares about. I'm sorry. So that's from Mark. I'm sorry. There's a few questions here about the schedule that came out, Dan. So that was from Mark. Neil in Manila said, can USC have their schedule reset if they weren't too timid to ask for it? And then John Abrea said, I see that Larry Scott did it to USC again, scheduling them for a Friday night road game at Washington State after an away game the previous Saturday at California. With no bye weeks and no game on Thanksgiving weekend, I'm sure he will blame it on USC's desire to play Notre Dame every year or something like that. Why do you think it's so difficult for Lynn Swann or anyone else at USC to stop this kind of ridiculous scheduling? Thanks for your time, John and Brett. So I grouped those together. My apologies. A bunch of questions about the schedule, Dan.
Yeah, I mean, I think overall, I'm not that upset about the schedule. I mean, you're going to have a bye somewhere, you got a plan that you're going to be in that championship game, and if the bye comes that week, well, at least it comes, you know, before a game where you could use it, you could take advantage of it. You know, if it comes before the Arizona game, I'm not sure how big a deal that is. So I think the bye, I'm not that opposed to, and some of that is impacted by USC and Stanford both playing Notre Dame in the middle of the year, in middle of October, on the road, and as the last home game of the year, when it's in California. So, you know, and last year I think Arizona had to go without a bye, and they were blaming it on USC. So, you know, it happens. I do think there ought to be a rule, and I think the athletic directors ought to make it clear, and the presidents ought to back them, that if we play a road game on a Saturday, we will not play a second road game the following Friday. That ought to be easy. How hard would it have been for the Washington State game to be Saturday? Sure, it takes you out of having USC Washington State on Friday night. So what? Who cares? I mean, you go to the Big Ten, for example, and they're going to do their first ever Friday night broadcast in the Big Ten. Well, Ohio State, Michigan, and Penn State immediately said, not us. We're not playing those Friday night games. And when was the last time Alabama played a Friday night game? You know, I mean, big time programs, Notre Dame, when do you think they played a Friday night game? It doesn't happen. USC ought to say, look, we're not playing those Friday night games. I mean, I'd like to see them say, we're not going to play them, period. Because the high schools deserve to have their night. And the second part of that is they should absolutely say, you schedule us for a Friday night game on the road as the second part of a two-week road trip, and we're not doing it. So don't do it. And if you do it, and if that comes out in the schedule, we're going to embarrass you, because you talk about athletes coming first, student athletes coming first, and you schedule in a way that you guarantee they miss another day of class. So don't come to us with this, oh, we're really caring about student athletes, when it's obviously you're caring about putting a game in that Friday night time slot that you think is more attractive than another game. I mean, those are going to be two ranked teams. Washington State has two, you know, top 50 players in the U.S. They've got their quarterback, Luke Falk. A lot of people, you know, have him in their top 15 coming back next year. You don't need to play that game on a Friday night. That game will get a great rating if you play it on Saturday. So for the Pac-12 to do that is just, it's foolish and short-sighted and stupid, to be honest. It doesn't make any sense anyway, especially then when you factor in that the USC kids are going to miss an extra day of class the following week and have to travel 2 weeks in a row. It's just shouldn't be done and shouldn't have been done, and USC probably ought to raise hell about it. I'm not sure if they do. We don't really get a chance to talk to them about those kinds of issues, unfortunately. We try, but, you know, we're not even sure. And the other part of it is you hear a lot of grumbling from the Pac-12 athletic directors that nobody listens to them, that Larry Scott figures a way, you know, that they will tell you this, that there are ways that the Pac-12 just goes around the athletic directors and gets stuff done that they want done, and that the athletic directors don't. So I don't know. I would draw the line on the Friday night second week on the road and say, absolutely not. We're not doing that.
Okay, I want one last one for you. We'll let you go. Mark from Crown City. He said, Happy New Year. Great start with the Rose Bowl victory and a promising continuation with National Signing Day just ahead. One of the underappreciated elements of Trojan football success is the tireless and generally unrecognized efforts of the student manager squad known as Jamokes. This past week, Jordan Moore posted a Jamokes Wanted call out on the SC Rips It blog. Any insight on the origins of the term Jamokes? Thank you both, as always, for your ongoing insights covering USC football. Best regards, Mark.
My guess is it doesn't have anything to do directly with USC. I think that's a term that's been around, and I think I probably at one time or another would have been able to tell you what the heck its origin was, but for the life of me right now, thinking about it, I can't. It just seems like it was a sort of a friendly / derogatory term for some sort of companions, fellow, you know, was it like in the military or, you know, kind of club? I'm not where I can look it up right away, but I'll try to find out. If you tell me where Crown City is. Is Crown City in California?
I don't think I've heard of that one either.
So.
I think we talked about that. Pasadena, right? Isn't that Pasadena?
The Crown City.
I thought that's what.
They are the Crown City. Okay. Well, I don't think I knew that. Okay. Well, that's good. I'll find out about Jamokes, and next week we'll let you know where the Jamokes term comes from.
I don't exactly know. I think we might have talked about something like that before, and I don't remember. There's like a But I think it might be specific to USC. There's an Urban Dictionary.
Really?
That says University of Southern California football manager. So maybe it's something like that. I don't know, but
I just have the sense that they may have appropriated that from somewhere else.
Yeah.
In the movie somewhere. I don't know. That's a really good one, though. We'll find out about that.
Yeah.
And maybe we'll get Marshall Charrington to give us the derivation of that one.
Yeah, he's, I think he's head Jamoke this year, right? Is he gonna be?
Yeah, he moved right up. Yeah, it was, we're real proud of Marshall there. So, yeah, I'll tell you what, those guys do a heck of a lot of work and they really matter. And, everywhere you go, you just are so impressed with managers at all these programs. They just, they're terrific.
They are hard working out there. So, all right. Well, that's a good one. Hey, not quite the 90 minutes of the, recruiting podcast, but going a pretty solid hour. That's not bad, Dan. So nice work.
Nice. Good questions. Thank you, guys.
Good questions. Yeah. So Dan Weber, make sure you check him out on the site, uscfootball.com. 1 week till signing day. Stay tuned to the site. We'll talk about a signing day event. Likely happening. We'll have more information on the site when we get it. So hope you guys enjoyed this show, and we will talk to you next time.
You've been listening to the Peristyle Podcast, presented by uscfootball.com. Be sure to tune in next week for the latest news on Trojan football and recruiting. And don't forget, you can automatically download the podcast directly to your smartphone or tablet for free. Just click the iTunes link on peristylepodcast.com or search for Peristyle Podcast at the iTunes Music Store.